everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of Leftist Right Podcast. Adam here. We are back with my two co-hosts, Matt and Brent. What's going on, boys?
Hello, sir.
Matt is on cloud 9 this week.
Gentlemen.
The dream.
Gentlemen, we have a lot to discuss this evening.
We sure do.
Some stars have aligned. Maybe a little bit of witchcraft at play, but the good kind. As you guys know, I may or may not be a Martin Truex Jr. fan. I didn't make that clear at the end of the last episode. So, yeah, I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful.
Did you write him a heartfelt apology letter for not putting him in your picks last week?
You know what, Brent? I'm chalking that up to a little bit of superstition. May not play again. That's what we're gonna run with. It's been a while, you know, since the crew chief god Cole Pern left us. It's been a struggle, but James Small, you know, we're sticking with the Cole Pern was a Canadian, and now James Small is an Australian, so they're finally jiving, and we pulled out a win. We had a fast car all day, and that rarely happens. Normally you get wrecked out or something stupid happens. So I'm doing great.
Well, let's so we'll let Matt continue his love letter to Truex here in a minute, but that's essentially going to be the recap for Phoenix this past weekend.
I'll run through the whole thing for our listening audience.
So we'll certainly let Matt continue to confess his love for Martin Truex Jr. here. But we're certainly not going to pass up the opportunity to pile on Kyle Busch some more from Phoenix. We're certainly also going to take a look at what's coming up this weekend in Atlanta. We'll probably wear ourselves out on the conversation a little bit, just like the asphalt there.
Yes.
We'll certainly wrap it up also with probably our favorite segment of winners, dark horses, and care center picks, as we love to call it. Unfortunately, go ahead. What'd you say, Matt? What'd you say?
I have some good updates. So I got the finishing list from the Instacart 500. So we can review where everybody's care center picks ended up. I don't know if you haven't checked. We can take a look.
I've tried to take a look. A little bit, but I didn't give it too much effort. So you've definitely gone above and beyond there. I'll give you a gold star.
That's how we keep you around.
Doing the best
so,
we can.
Unfortunately, we have nobody to interview because we don't know anybody in NASCAR still. And judging by the analytics on episode 1 from the Anchor app, we've got 4 plays to date.
That's amazing. In fact,
one of those is probably me. And maybe the others are YouTube or the others are you guys. So there might be one person out there.
My dad listened to it. we got one outside listener.
Excellent.
So we know 50% because I did not listen to it.
Excellent. So at this point, anybody who's listening to this is new here. So if you can, if you haven't heard episode 1, which chances are high in this case, you can go back and look at that on anchor.fm/LIR NASCAR podcast and on Spotify. Google and Apple podcasts at this point are taking a little bit of time to set up. Last but not least, I think Matt has got our Twitter handle up and running. So you can find us there at LeftIsRightPod is the handle. I don't really know much about Twitter. So yeah, go over there, love us, retweet us, do whatever you do on Twitter. Get us hooked up with a NASCAR team driver, crew member, or person selling hot dogs at Daytona, because I don't really care at this point. We just need to meet some people.
Listen, hot dog guy from Daytona probably has some amazing stories.
I know.
Absolutely.
So.
That's probably enough of my junk. Matt, you want to start? Let's give us your love letter of your Phoenix review.
Let's talk about Phoenix Raceway, the Instacart 500. So the race time, 3 hours on the dot with an average speed of 103 miles an hour. They had seven cautions for 45 laps, with Martin Truex Jr. taking home the margin of victory by 1.698 seconds. And I didn't breathe for the last 28 laps of that. So, yeah, let's get into it. Let's talk about the race a little bit. So it started off right off the bat. Our first care center. First care center happened. It was Anthony Alfredo. So none of us took the pasta man to be our care center pick. But he actually didn't end up finishing. Oh, he did. He was second. He was second to last. So
I think Timmy Hill had engine failure.
Well, it was an engine. Correct. So the first crash car of the race was Anthony Alfredo. So now that that's out of the way, right off the start, though, the Penske cars looked great. They looked awesome. They actually ended stage one, first, second, and third, which is rare, really rare, and really, really good for the playoff points. Because I expect all three of those cars to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's, I think I harped on that in my picks. But right off the rip there, you mentioned in the last episode about the dog leg and how 5, 6, 7 wide could be a real legitimate thing coming on the start. And Jesus, man, Keselowski damn near sideswiped the pit wall or the pit wall exit there going in down into one. And whew, man, it was close. You could see the dust coming up off the wall.
he could reach his arm out the window and left his autograph on the pit wall.
I don't know. So those cars, then most tracks now have safer barriers on the inside and the outside of the track. And I don't know how well a car would take to a left-hand side swipe. That's a very rare move these days. So good thing he missed it. And yeah, he got some positions from that move too. Was that the green flag start?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
That was insanity. Complete insanity. So what else? Other highlights? We'll get into the Kyle Busch. We'll save that for the end. We'll talk about that little incident there. But other than that, you know, I had a pretty exciting race. A lot of great restarts. Like I said, seven cautions. So plenty of restarts, plenty of activities, plenty of cars diving real low in that dog leg. Notable events was the Kyle Larson in the 5 car, Rick Hendrick car. He started the race from the back of the pack. And was that due? What was that? That was multiple failed inspections. So
yeah, he failed pre-race inspection 2 times along with two of his teammates.
Yes. I note the Chase Elliott number 9 car and the William Byron number 24 car. So interesting.
There's something in the water over there.
Well, so that's what we were talking about, right? We were after Las Vegas race. It was all like, you know, Hendrick has got everything going on and things are looking good. And it seems to me like somebody tipped them off prior to pre-race inspection that they've got something going on that maybe they're doing something a little different.
Something, you know, some of the rules are written to be bent, and maybe they bent them a little too far to actually break them. So
it certainly didn't slow them down after they did whatever they needed to do to get past inspection and start at the end of the field. Well, it didn't slow them down a pit lane, that's for sure.
Well, that's...
So if you're new to the NASCAR world, pre-race inspection, there's a series of checks they've got to do, and it's the technology being used over the years has certainly involved or has evolved. And at this point, I think the name of the system is called like Hawkeye or something like that. And I don't really know much about it other than they're taking all kinds of measurements and angles and, you know, putting all types of different things on the car to make sure, you know, quarter panels are right as far as what the NASCAR rule book says, and you know, it's
the laser inspection. Yes. Yeah. Laser.
So, these cars are all very similar, but yet also very different, it seems like, week in and week out. So
it's funny where they can find speed, right? So whatever the Hendrick car was, cars were trying to do to find that speed, they got called for. So yeah, for whatever reason, like Brent said, they didn't slow down. So Larson starts from the back, drives up through the field, gets caught speeding on pit road to the back again. Handful of laps later, Larson's up there running with the leaders, and then Larson speeds again for a second time and has to start from the back of the field for a third time.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, he finished seventh. Yeah. So
they're still there. So after all of that, he still gets a top 10.
The wow. Man must have passed 45 cars. Like, I don't. Oh God, we can probably do the math, but it had to be what? It had to be at least 50 cars. He had to pass. So yeah, it was insane. But other than that, great end of the race. They took. Well, I'm checking over my notes here. We had a couple of late race cautions. So caution comes out laps 49. Lap 49 was for the, let's see. Yeah, it was an accident. And all the leaders, Bubba's actually running up top. So that's the 23 car, Bubba Wallace with 2311 Racing. Was running up with the leaders, top five, and chose to stay out. He had the freshest tires compared to the rest of the field. So everybody else pits, you know, they circle around, get back up in their starting positions. And Bubba just can't hold it together on the restart. And actually started first, and within two laps, he was down to fourth place. So he held his own, but it just showed how good, fresh set of tires, right? Just that little extra. And I didn't catch the lap fall off, you know, for a number percentage of the tires, but man, it really showed right there. So drove the heck out of the thing. Where did he finish too? Yeah. Finished in 16th. So, ooh.
Yeah. So that's obviously from where he was and where he ended up. You know, I think about it. We talked about this early on, I think in the episode last time was kind of the expectations for that team, or maybe we just talked about it in the discussions. They seem to be plagued week in and week out by their decisions on pit road. Yep. So
growing pains of that new team over there.
Yeah. So again, from my perspective, they're figuring it out, and it could be a while, I think, before you see Bubba get a win. But things have got to go right, and certainly, I keep kind of watching like where he's at compared to his old team and Eric Jones in the 43 car.
Good comparison. Yep.
Just to kind of see how they did. And there was a little dust up with that about Vegas, because I think Eric Jones had a fairly good run there. Mm-hmm. But he...
What was happening at restarts at Phoenix was the car on the outside would get the better jump, better launch. But the preferred groove was on the inside. So Logano with, well, how many laps to go at that point? With 29 or so laps to go, chose the inside. And Truex lined up on the outside. And behind Truex was actually Joey's teammate, the two car, Brad Keselowski. So green flag, Joey spins. Truex gets a big bump from Keselowski. And the rest is history, boys. I held my breath for 20 so laps, and Truex kept pulling away and opened up a pretty good lead. But... And it's been a while. It's always great to start out a week with a win on a Sunday. I'll tell you that much. So I have to say,
Joey spinning in that situation is very uncharacteristic of him. He seems to be a phenomenal restarter in those situations and didn't get it done there. So
it's a shame. It really is.
Truex capitalized. So I'll, you know, give it to him. Give it to the man. He got it done when it mattered.
That's it. And on a personal level, I figured out which T-shirt is my lucky T-shirt. So
don't ever wash that, Matt. Don't ever wash it.
I've washed it today, but maybe it's not my stank that got it done. Hopefully it's just the luck of the shirt. So we'll see. Sure. Yeah, great. Didn't really do a burnout. I know, Adam, that's something we need to discuss. But, you know, maybe he's saving the engine. you know?
No, I thought he did one after he after his interview and he drove the car back, no?
He did, but, you know, I was ready for the, you know, drop it into third and let her eat, you know?
Yeah,
but
it doesn't really, I feel like if you don't do it off the blip of the win, you know, when you come back around, like,
yeah,
you've lost the energy, you've lost the momentum, so.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And I honestly, after he spoke, I shut it off. So I didn't even see the burnout. I had to go back and watch it.
I mean, the greatest burnout in NASCAR history, that from my perspective, was a Watkins Glen race where Jeff Gordon won, and he literally smoked it three quarters of the way around the track. At a road course. It was absolutely insane. I don't even remember what year it was, but I remember watching it on TV and I'm not sure who the announcer was at that point in time, but they were just like in awe. It was amazing.
the bar has been set.
Right. So from my perspective, that's where it starts. If you don't even come close to that, you suck.
I don't know. Joey does some good burnouts, and Larson. Those moving ovals they do.
Yeah.
Those are pretty epic.
You know who sucks at burnouts? Ty Gibbs.
Who? He's not crying at the camera.
Oh, jeez. We'll talk about crying. We can get into Mr. Chastain and Kyle Busch having a little bit of a kerfuffle on the racetrack and off the racetrack.
Some feathers were ruffled.
So, Brent, tell us about it. Tell us about it, because I'm a little – it's hard to tell from the video replay, but from your perspective, what did you see?
What I saw is I don't see Kyle Busch having a really good reason to get all hot and bothered at Ross Chastain about that. I mean, it's not a clear indication that Ross dumped him. What I see is that Kyle Busch checked up, or he lifted off the throttle, maybe got on the brakes a little early, and Ross couldn't slow down in time or couldn't get underneath him in time and made contact. I mean, I don't even think there was noticeable damage to either car. So it wasn't like he really punted him. And put him around, but the aftermath footage on pit lane was pretty entertaining to watch. Ross is standing there with his kind of hands crossed behind his back, and Kyle Busch is speaking in a very animated manner with his hands, and you know,
I'm sure Chastain looked like, you know, one of them London guards at the Queen's Castle, like. Just give it to me.
You know what? Kyle Busch knows that he'll get rocked. You know, you don't mess with a farm boy, right? You don't do it. Kyle Busch would be on his butt if it was, you know, that's my opinion on the matter. But what was said, we'll never know. We'll never know what was said until one of them speaks about it.
Either him or I think De Benedetto was standing there next to him. The video was on like Facebook or something, and someone commented and just said, "Oh, Matty D's got the popcorn out, just checking it out."
Matty D's the nicest guy in the world, so like, there's no possible way that he could do anything in that situation.
No, he's just going to stand there and watch it, you know.
Maybe we'll reach out to Matty D and see if he wants to discuss what happened.
Can you enlighten
to hit him up? Hit him up on Twitter, Matt. Send him a message. However you do, tweet at him. Is that what you do?
We're gonna Twitter him.
Twitter him.
So if you don't know Ross Chastain, right? His nickname is Melon Man. You might be asking yourself why. Okay, so
I am.
Ross's family. Is they're watermelon farmers, I think from Florida, right, Matt?
Yeah, and not only his family, but seven generations before him have all been
generations of melons.
He's like the Forrest Gump of watermelons.
Yeah, so if you're eating watermelon right now, chances are it came from Ross.
Just family. Well.
But yeah, I think he ended up, what, 19th? And Kyle ended up, you know, unfortunately, you know, back with the 50-somethings in 25th.
It's a shame. It really is. And, yeah, that's right. So Ross was in 19th, and our best friend Kyle Busch was in 25th.
And the better news from all that is it dumped Kyle down to 15th in the standings. which makes him one line, you know, one spot up from the last spot in the playoff battle there. So it's early. It's early, shame. But you know, he's I think Brent, you said it best with your putting him in your dark horse and care center pick of last week of you know, he's getting frustrated, and I think that's clearly evident in you know, week in and week out, he's got something to say.
Mm-hmm. It's always somebody's fault, right?
Never Kyle Busch's fault. The car's bad. My team's bad. This is the worst equipment ever. Or, you know, in this case, Ross Chastain doesn't know what he's doing. Or to quote Kyle Busch, I should have dumped the 42. So
that's right.
Yeah. Payback's coming. So we'll see how Kyle feels about it this week.
This week, all three NASCAR Cups or NASCAR Series, so that's Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup, are going to Atlanta Motor Speedway in Hampton, Georgia. Trucks and Xfinity is running a doubleheader on Saturday afternoon, and I think Kyle's running in Trucks, so drama to follow. And then Sunday, we've got the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, 3 p.m. start, 325 laps. It's a mile and a half oval down there, and giving us 500-mile race. What you need to know about Atlanta is that the track surface is old, very old, and it's going to play a factor in this race. So what do you guys see about that? What do you think?
I raced it, so I was on the steering rig here in my basement, and just before this phone call, just running some laps just to see, you know, what the story is. And I forgot about this when we were talking about it, Adam and Brent, yesterday, was there's a huge bump into turn one. You almost got to go over it before you think about letting off the gas. So something to watch there. Outside of that, a lot different than Phoenix, 24 degrees of banking in the corners. Right. So a lot more, you know, energy can be carried around that track due to the design and the centripetal force keeping the car on the track.
Yeah. I think, you know, if Kyle Larson continues to have pit lane problems, it's going to really hurt him this time around. They're giving him 13 sets of tires, whether they use them or not. That's a lot of coming down pit lane, and if you've got problems on pit lane, it's gonna really hurt you, as these cars are gonna go through tires at a pretty rapid rate with the condition of this racing surface. So I think that the pit lane race is going to be just as important as the race out on the track.
We're just saying with Bubba, right? Of all the struggles that team has had on pit road, more so than on the track, so. Might be a long day for Bubba, unfortunately. He might just have to stay patient.
This is where you're going to learn, right? You want to see green flag pit stops, right? This is where the team's going to get a lot of experience real quick. And sticking on the pit thing, so our America's crew chief, Larry McReynolds, I think he's quoted as saying, at Atlanta, I told my teams to carry the tires to the car. Don't roll them. So...
Might wear them out there on pit road before they even see track time.
Really, yep. Really, really yep. Abusive. Got the cheese graters, right? So
The fall off's going to be huge. I mean, last weekend, for example, you know, with Martin Truex's car, he had a car, and I'm sure part of it's his driving style, that would be faster in the long runs, and it worked out for him at the end of the race, and that's going to be a big factor here. If you're passing people in the first two or three laps after a tire change, you're going to be getting passed by those same guys 10 laps later. So tire management is going to be something that the drivers are going to have to figure out what's fastest over the course of a set of tires, and trying to adjust the driving style a little bit to go along with that.
So like stage one. Oh, I'm sorry, Matt.
No, the last quote, right? What's that road racing quote, Brent? It's what? Smooth is fast is smooth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't keep the tires underneath the car.
I think we're going to learn a lot real fast in this raid. So stage one is 105 laps. And, you know, if NASCAR has said we're given 13 sets of tires, right, that you can use during this race, you know, 20 to 30 laps, 30 laps for sure, things are going to be worn out. So there could potentially be 3-4, depending on how it plays out, you know, tire changes in the first stage.
That's crazy. Normally they try to split the stages, right? It's crazy here.
I mean, I feel like other tracks are up in like the 35 lap range, you know. I don't know off the top of my head, but just like thinking back to other races on where they need tires and things like that. So it's crazy how a really old surface can chew it up that quickly. It's nuts.
It'll give them a lot of opportunities to make adjustments to the car if it's not handling the way they want. So
that's my question. Is Matt was talking about bumping, you know, big bump into turn one. The track surface is terrible. There's 24 degrees of banking. What can they do car setup wise to maximize tire life?
I mean, the two biggest things to tire life are going to be the way the driver drives the car. You know, how aggressive is he on getting on the power coming off the corners, and tire pressures. You've got to get that tire temperature in an ideal range. You get to let the tire get a little too hot, it's going to start to chew it up faster. So I think with the Xfinity race starts at what, 5 o'clock on Saturday, yep. You know, that they're going to start seeing the track get colder, which might work in their favor, as opposed to the middle of the afternoon race, depending on the weather. I don't think they're calling it for being all that warm down in Atlanta, where Atlanta's usually typically hotter than the surface of the sun. So they might, that might play in their favor a little bit for trying to keep the tires underneath the car with the track temperatures not being too outrageous. But I can't, you know.
So it'll be interesting then. Look for, you know, if we're talking about, you know, the way the world works in NASCAR these days with, you know, stage wins and stage positioning being a critical component to points scored versus just overall winning the race, as we saw at Phoenix. So Truex is the race winner, but Logano walks away with the most points for the weekend.
All right.
Coming in second place.
Logano, it's okay.
So I'm going to take that jab.
I'm not going to take it. You're throwing it out there.
But if you're... I got to send you a nice Christmas card.
Don't worry.
So if you think about it though, right, if that's important, so we were creating races inside of a race here, and we're now at a track where tire fall off is severe. It's very important to get stage points throughout the race. So you're going to want to be aggressive at the right time. And, you know, thinking about how that works and everything we just said, that could pay off for some people, or it could be catastrophic for some people.
Depends on what you're looking for, right? If Joe, you got your driver in the playoffs with a win, right? You're trying to get as many of those stage points as you can, right? Or a driver trying to get into the lock himself in the playoffs by winning, you know, may you know, waste the stage two, right? Or not push as hard, so he knows he has a good set of rubbers going into the final checkered flag. So speaking of just to kind of give everybody a little bit of a frame of reference to what we're talking about with tire fall off, I just found a note from Atlanta over a set of tires, right? So when the tires go on to the tires come off the car itself will lose 3 seconds per lap at the end of a run.
That's a ton. That is a ton. What's like, do you have an idea what the average lap time they're running?
28, in a couple? 29 seconds in that range.
Man, that's huge.
Is that crazy?
That's a ton. Speaking of tires, if you guys don't mind me taking a little minute here to kind of slightly change the subject. Goodyear and NASCAR and Bubba Wallace were at Richmond, I believe, on Wednesday with the next gen car, supposedly for Goodyear tire development. You know, the next gen car's got larger wheels, so Goodyear's got to go back to the drawing board and make a whole new set of tires for this next gen car next year. So they got a few sound bites from Bubba. It's funny, the first comment he made was that the new car sounds cool from inside the car, which I thought was kind of
car guy.
That's the important thing. And they did post a sound clip. NASCAR did post a sound clip. So the next gen car now has a dual exhaust, one exhaust out each side of the car instead of both exiting out the I believe it's the passenger side on the current stuff.
It's
amazing because, like, Brent, you talked about that right in your NASCAR story about the sound of the car, right? And
right.
Like, as a kid, like, right, that's one of the things you remember. And you don't even have to be a kid to, like, if you ever go have an opportunity to go to a race, the sound that is generated is just, it's earth shattering. There's right. Nothing else like it. It only exists in one place. And if you don't like it, then, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but there's something wrong with you.
That's right. Yeah. So there is a sound. There's a video clip, one lap of Bubba at Richmond from this week that NASCAR put up, and it's not the highest quality video shot, but the car does sound just a little bit different, and I think it has a lot to do with you've now got an exhaust pipe out each side of the car, which I believe last year Kurt Busch got a chance behind the wheel and actually complained about interior temperatures. Because now you're basically sitting on half of the exhaust system. So one of the things two things they focused on. One was Goodyear was trying to get a feel on tires, and they were doing some infrared camera activity on the inside to try and make sure that the interior temperatures could be, they stated they want to improve the interior temps over the current car for the drivers to especially for the you know, summer races where it's already hot outside. So that was kind of interesting to hear. I know Bubba commented that the car felt pretty good, didn't have anything all that exciting to say about it. I know the NASCAR engineer had made a comment about the speeds they're running are on par with the current cars, which initially caught me off guard. Then I realized that, you know, we've kind of found the safe limit for how fast these cars can go around these tracks, hence the restrictor plates, you know. So
yeah.
I maybe on road courses you might see a big impact where insanely high speeds aren't really a big issue.
Cornering speed could be big, right? And much improved right. Cornering speed.
Exactly. So if they can pick up cornering speed on a road course, that'll trade off to much bigger lap times. I would think so. So, but thought that was pretty interesting. So the car's coming along.
Did Bubba kiss the body up against the wall at all to see how it's going to take a hit or what?
No, he must not have, because I think that was the prime thing. We should, yeah, because I think, Matt, you said they haven't stated whether or not they're going sheet metal or composite on those yet.
One is nothing that I've seen or read has mentioned either way, right? So we're still up in the air on that.
I thought I've seen speculation about composite in the form of a carbon fiber tub.
Maybe for the driver, right?
I've,
itself.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know
but
about
as far
the external
as the panels and stuff on the outside. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and talking about tire fall off, I missed this. And this is maybe only one data point to look at, but Bubba did comment that he seemed to feel like that as the tires fell off, that the balance of this car was better maintained than the current car. Where current cars, as the tires fall off, you typically end up with a car that is either pushing into a corner, doesn't want to turn, or it's loose into a corner and the rear end wants to slide out. And he seemed to feel pretty good after they ran about 6 hours worth off and on. I think it was Wednesday. He felt pretty good about the consistency of the car over long runs. So the drivers are probably going to like that, I would think, in the future.
I would assume they would. It'll be more predictable. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think
we got good Richmond stories, Matt. We've got a. So Matt and I went to Richmond 2014, was it?
In the Winnipeg, in the
well, in the it disco.
Was the disco. That's right, the disco.
In the disco. Yeah. We left real early in the morning.
What a rude. Stories are so good. Your father. And what he put you through?
So here's the story. Matt was allowed to go to sleep, and I had to stay awake. It was a Friday night. We left, or Saturday morning at like midnight or whatever. So it was a Saturday night race at Richmond under the lights, and so we meet my dad. Matt's allowed to sleep, so he sleeps on the couch. And I'm there like, I've got it. My dad wants me to stay awake, to make sure everything's good. So I stay awake and I'm just like head bobbing all the way down Interstate 81 into Virginia. And I'm dying. And then, Matt finally wakes up when we get to, where the hell we go?
It's Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel, of course. Yeah, Cracker Barrel.
Why would you go anywhere else?
So then we get to the race, and I've not slept at all whatsoever.
I was feeling great.
It's like 9 o'clock in the morning at this point, and we're like, all right, let's crack some beers, let's go check it out. We've never been to Richmond, right? So we go, go to the merch and see what's going on over there by the track. And at Richmond, you're way out in the distance. You got to take the tram, So take the tram in. We go do all that, find the merch, look around. We head back. It starts pouring rain. Matt and I run back to the RV. We go underneath of it because you can do that. That's how big it is, right? And we just sit by the drive shaft to stay dry.
Dude, someone locked us out of the camper.
But then fast forward, right, to race time. We go in. It's a great race, NASCAR race, right? So you can pile all your beer in the cooler. You head on in there. You get your seat cushion and you sit down. And we had pretty good seats. I think we were like front stretch coming off of four, kind of between there and the start finish line. So it was a really good spot. We were pretty low, and obviously Richmond being a small track, but I think it was probably like halfway through the race, all of a sudden there's a caution, and Richmond's known for being, a little bit of chaos there, being a short track, right? Certainly not Bristol, but good race. But it's really kind of boring, to be honest with you. There wasn't really much going on track other than just staying green for a while. But all of a sudden, caution comes out and everyone's like, what's going on? You look over to the left, some dude is climbing the catch fence in turn four mid-race.
I climbed the catch fence to the point where they had to bring the caution out.
He did everybody a favor.
Yeah, we got. It really was. If you think about it, it really was. It really was.
Take him off the team, bud.
I'm trying to find that clip and that picture and post it on our Twitter. Yeah, the world see that. I had that picture. I got to find it.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. I mean, you would, because we've been, obviously at that point I had not been to Talladega, but that, thinking back now that we've been to Talladega, I feel like that's something we would have seen there. But we saw it at Richmond.
race.
Great place.
That was a fun race. Every race we've ever been to, there's stories. This is a little taste of what's to come, for sure.
But as far as Atlanta goes, the tire fall off, obviously, that's going to be the story of the day. If I had to predict or put my money on it, for sure, that's going to probably be number one, and then translating that onto pit road and see who can get it done. I think the teams that can get it done on pit road will have their opportunity at the end of the race for sure.
Late race caution, that's where we're going to shine. So
don't spin your tires and you might have a chance to win.
Pick the right lane. I don't know which one's the right lane, but yes. We'll find out.
Yeah. But here's an interesting facts about Atlanta, though, right? So Ryan Newman, of all people, Ryan Newman has 7 pole wins, been on the pole 7 times at Atlanta, the most of any current active driver. But he's never won.
Got 9 top 10s, 2 top 5s, and led 195 laps, but never closed the deal.
Wild. Wow. And that's a guy who's getting to the end of his career, right? So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, sure. Right now, right, we're not practicing, we're not qualifying, which is, you know, stinks because we're not able to kind of assess as the week goes on where people are, how people are feeling. No one's getting the opportunity to check their stuff out on track, you know, prior to the race. It's just unload them off the trailer, pass tech, and have at it, boys.
And that's why Kyle Busch went down to the trucks, right? He that man needs seat time in the car.
Yeah.
Right. He's a make the car better and yell at my pit crew type of guy. Right. So he needs to, in his mind, he needs seat time. So he's going to take every chance he get to drive that truck he owns.
Because he's not into doing sim stuff, is he?
That's a great question.
I think he does. Because listening to his complaints to his crew chief, you know, mid race is, or not even mid race, like, you know, lap two. I think at Phoenix he was, or Las Vegas, one or the other, is, you know, telling his crew chief that you know, whatever we did on the sim, we certainly didn't translate it to the track. So,
my God, anything, dude, he's playing with the computer guy. Like, bud, what if it's you? What if it's you, Kyle?
It's not me, it's you.
So, last Atlanta race, the top five in this order, Kevin Harvick with the win, Kyle Busch in second, Martin Truex Jr., Mads Lover in third, Ryan Blaney in fourth, that's an interesting name there, and then the machine, Denny Hamlin, in fifth. Everybody but Truex on that list started in the top 10 that day.
So what does that tell you? Before we get into picks, let's review how we did last week, how our picks from Phoenix ended up.
That's good. That's
and
good.
I will go first because I have crow teeth. I chose Denny Hamlin over my heart was telling me Martin Truex Jr. like it does every single week. And this week I said to myself, I said, Matt, don't be an idiot. You can't do this every week. Everybody's going to laugh at you with this podcast. So be intelligent and pick anybody else besides Kyle Busch. So I looked at the list and I'm like, Denny Hamlin. We'll take Denny Hamlin. And then if you all listen to the last week's episode, at the end of the podcast, Adam left it in. You hear a little birdie going, Martin Truex is going to win this race. And that little birdie was me. And I should have went with my gut. But that's okay. It's all good. We'll move on. It is what it is. So I took Denny Hamlin for my winner. He ended up in third place. So not a bad pick. Not a bad pick.
In your defense, isn't Hamlin leading the points right now?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
So he is the winner at the moment.
Okay. All right. You're not going to like my pick this either. But I think my dark horse was Blaney, and he ended up in 10th. So that's not bad.
Your dark horse was not Blaney. My dark horse was Blaney. You picked Matt DiVincenzo.
I'm sorry. I did take Matt.
Jesus.
My A looked like the M. All right. Leave me alone. My Matty D. So 14. So what's if I'm going to combine those, no, I'm just kidding. We're not doing that. So Matt D and 14th. So my favorite pick out of all the picks we do is the Care Center. So I took Corey LaJoy. He ended up in 27th position.
So he wasn't on the lead lap?
I don't think so.
No, because Kyle wasn't in 25th, so.
Okay. Well, that's good then. So that scored pretty well. That's pretty well. So those are my last week picks. Gentlemen, do you want to go over your picks or you want me to go into what we got for this week?
I don't, you know, pick wise, I think I had Logano to win, Blaney in the dark horse, and Josh Balicki in my care center pick. And
Josh Balicki. Yes.
How did Balicki do? So that's really all I care about right now.
This is gonna be the most competitive segment, I'm telling you.
Yeah, where did Balicki go? You're the stats guy.
Balicki. Ooh, you did good, Adam. 35th. He DNF'd. You're good.
Hell yeah, brother.
So
he didn't go to the care center. He didn't get power steering in his eye or anything.
No, he did not. And Adam, he did collect points. He had 2 points.
So. Good day. Good day, bud.
Good day. Good day. All right, Britton P, you had what? You had who was your race winner?
I had Chase Elliott as race winner. He ended up fifth.
Okay.
And then I had our favorite person.
KB.
So KB. Brent, he ended up in 25th, and like Adam said, he was lapped down.
But so here's the thing. He got turned. Had he hit the wall and the car not able to continue, he would have been in the care center.
So Adam,
you would have.
He was close, but
so close. Yeah, yep. So you were the only driver who had an accident. So way to go, buddy.
That's not even a real one. I mean, power steering. Like, come on, man. That's like the most. That's like the least chaotic thing that could have happened. You know.
So. I think the way this goes, if your driver, if we have none of our picks end up in the care center, it's the worst finish, right? And Adam, you win. You would have won this week,
Ooh.
Right? So,
I can go with those. We just make those rules up on the spot.
Yeah, cool. I think it sounds good.
It's logical. It's very logical.
I know you guys. It's fine. All right, cool. Yep. So that was Phoenix. That is the end of Phoenix. That is my picks. Like I said, I should have gone with my gut and took Martin Truex Jr. So let's jump ahead to Atlanta, the dirty ATL. For my winner, I will be taking the Denny Hamlin car again to win the race. That's who I'm taking. So little, just so we can get everybody up to speed on Denny Hamlin here. He has one win, five top fives, and eight top tens. So I'm taking Denny Hamlin, and we know what that meant last week. So my dark horse, and Adam, as soon as you segue to it, I hope you didn't pick him also. I'm taking Ryan Newman, as Adam said.
Okay.
So the man's not in good equipment. Right. Roush Fenway has fallen off their high horse. And I think if he's going to get it done, if it's not on a super speedway, it's going to be here. So that leaves my care center pick. Any other year, this pick would have been a no-brainer. But I'm going to take the Daytona 500 champion, Michael McDowell, to end up in the care center first this week.
Wow.
So why? Tell me why Michael McDowell is going to end up in the care center.
Mr. McDowell. So let me, did I have that stat up or did I not write that down?
Front row motorsports.
Yes, in the front row motorsports car. So Michael McDowell tends to start in the 29th position. And he ends up worse than that. In the 33rd position.
Okay, so you're taking the Josh Bilicki strategy.
I like that a lot. And I honestly, the Josh Bilicki strategy. I didn't think to do it last time, so I'm going to steal that. His stats here: he has 10 races in total, zero wins, zero top fives, zero top tens, and no poles.
What a line!
So. I think he did make 400K somehow. I don't know where racingreference.com gets this info, but he made almost half a mil. So,
racing here?
Allegedly, according to the earnings report. So,
yeah, so yes. I think earnings-wise, I think a lot of that stuff over the... What year was that noted of the earnings?
Oh, my gosh. So this is to date at Atlanta, so I don't know when they stopped reporting. Okay.
Because it's been like most things that I can find on earnings, like over the last 3 or 4 years, that stuff has become classified information. And I think that's a strategy of not giving out like where they are from a financial status standpoint.
It makes sense. I wouldn't want people seeing it unless I work for the government. But
yeah,
other than that too, and found out today is Racing Reference. .info is actually a NASCAR owned entity. I didn't know that.
Okay. So that's what they're using for all their record keeping and statistics and stuff like that. Sounds like.
Yep. Great cool. site too.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Those are my picks, gentlemen, and I'm curious to see who do I want to go next? I want Brent. Brent, tell me about your picks for Atlanta, the cheese grater.
The cheese grater. I know, I think we've commented that, you know, if you look at statistics, Kevin Harvick, you know, he won there last year, and he is the top-rated driver for Atlanta. But he's been kind of quiet so far this year. You know, yeah, he's got four top tens, but his average finish is about the same place he starts, seventh or eighth place. So I'm not jumping on that train. I'm gonna go with Mr. Keselowski to win. I think he wrecked out at Daytona, but he's led laps the last three races.
That was his own damn fault at Daytona. His own damn fault.
He tore that thing up.
Yep. He's led laps the last three races. I think he's got two wins.
Yep.
At Atlanta. And he's been averaging starts outside the top 10, but finishing inside the top 10. So, I'm putting my money there. For the dark horse, I am going to go with Kurt Busch. As another driver who has a fairly good track record at Atlanta, that we also don't really talk much about, the wrecker. And this is interesting. It's funny, and I was trying to figure out who I was going to pick to be the wrecker, about the same time I'm looking at the videos circulating between Ross Chastain and Kyle Busch from Phoenix. So I started looking into Ross Chastain, and his average Atlanta finish is just one place better than Quinn Hoff. So,
oh, baby.
So I'm going with Ross.
In Cup, is that his Cup records, or because he's raced a fair amount of Cup at despite being a first full time driver now, but he's raced a fair amount of Cup in the past.
Yep. So average finish at Atlanta is not good, but he's a more aggressive driver than you would get out of Quinn. So I'm gonna expect fireworks from Mr. Melon Man.
Honestly, it hurts my heart because I do pull for the Melon Man when, you know, Truex isn't in the situation. And but Brent, you're spot on, man. He doesn't finish races well. Doesn't. So great picks, bud. So you got the number two car, the one car, and the 42 car. Adam, it sounds like Brent took one of yours.
Well, you guys are killing me. Picks, huh? You guys are really killing me here.
You took all your picks, eh?
No, I've got one left. I've got one left, and I think you guys are doubting someone here, and Brent kind of alluded to it. As a winner, I'm taking Harvick.
Oh, he's going to do it. Yeah.
I think Tony Stewart has lit a fire under his ass because it's time to make some money in that team, and they've obviously not done well yet. But here's why. I think Harvick, you know, we talked about tire fall off, right? And I'm really not a Harvick fan, as I think I've said that before. But just like we rip on Kyle, I think Harvick's an incredible driver. And I think he's the most disciplined driver in this field, maybe aside from Denny. Fair. With his track record at Atlanta, despite his struggles this year, I think this is an opportunity for Harvick to get himself back into the conversation, because it's really not like, yeah, obviously I would expect Harvick to probably have a win by now, but you know, he isn't doing bad. I think he's top 10 in points, so he's in the picture.
And I think last year, just what he collapsed right in the later part of the playoffs.
Yep.
I think that shocked a lot of people because that was his to win, right?
It was. So yeah, last year was probably his time, and he collapsed, and it's transferred over maybe a little bit as far as wins go this year, but he's figured out how to get points when it matters so far, and that's obviously going to play an effect. And I think this, based on everything we talked about, you've got to manage the track here and manage your race very well, and I think he can do that. I think he's disciplined enough to get it done.
Do you expect to see him up front the whole race, or just when it matters at the end?
Just when it matters at the end. I mean, what did somebody say? Bryn, did you say where is he starting at? He's got to be starting.
Yeah, seventh.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he will. You know, I, what's going to hurt his day is probably being racing around somebody he shouldn't be racing around. You know, I don't think Harvick's going to beat himself. Let's just put it that way.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a good pick. Like you said, I think he is capable of saving the car, probably better than any of the other drivers in the field.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get Harvick back to back, and I could smoke you all. We'll see.
Yeah. You know what, buddy? I saw that. You know, that tasty apple dangling in front of us of Kevin Harvick for the winner, and I'm like, yeah. It's there. It's the obvious choice, right? So I'm glad someone took it, and hopefully, buddy, it pays off for you.
We'll see. Yeah. Dark Horse.
Not rooting for you at all, but you know, hopefully.
It's all right. It's just a one-man party over here. It's all good. Dark Horse. I can't pick anybody but Kurt Busch. You know, same thing, really. I think he's had a good year so far. Obviously, being his last as a full-time Cup driver, there's some, I think there's some extra motivation for him. Obviously, I think I said it earlier, he's got 3 wins here, just like Harvick, as an active wins leader right now. We'll see. You know, I think Kurt don't get no love sometimes, you know, being Kyle's brother, but.
I like Kurt Busch. I can actually watch. He's great on TV, and he's not an idiot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. And that's the only really reason why. And I think if there's a track that he's obviously good at and could manage, it's probably here. I think he kind of fits that same Harvick category in that sense. So, we'll see if he can get it done. So I'm riding with Brent on that one.
Okay. All right.
So the infamous care center. Oh, let me think about this a little bit. So
got to pivot, huh?
I've got 2 guys written down, but I'm going with my initial thought here still. So this guy, he's definitely not been running where he wants to all year. And he definitely needs to start getting it done at some point in time. He's a teammate of Mr. Kurt Busch in that 42 car, Ross Chastain, Melon Man. I totally agree. So I think you could probably, at this point, almost guarantee for Ross that he didn't look bothered on pit lane, but he's definitely bothered. He's an aggressive driver. People are commenting now about him not getting it done. And I talked about, you know, stage points being important, and that's an opportunity for Ross to use his aggressiveness, but let's just hope he's got good tires under him.
You know what, Adam? And he's getting frustrated and people are talking, right? And my father taught me at a very young age, it's don't tell him what you know, show him what you know. Right. And it applies to racing. And sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut and don't rub people the wrong way, especially, you know, Kyle Busch, who will pay you back. You will get paid back. It's probably the worst time for you.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to push that car a little harder this week. And yeah, that's some decent equipment he's in, but we'll see, man. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think I hope Ross proves me wrong, because I really like Ross. Like, if I had, like, I'm at a point in my NASCAR fandom where, like, I don't really have grudges against drivers. Maybe I did when I was younger, just on based on the things I was hearing, and I've got a lot more respect for everybody up and down the field. But I really like Ross's story. He has raced a lot of Cup, but this being his first full-time year and finally getting an opportunity, you know, to show what he has. And I like his brand. I think it's just great in general for the sport. So we'll see. I'm, you know, I don't know if he's my number 2 guy, but I would like to see him succeed. So this is kind of a hard pick to make and put him in the care center, but he's, you know,
he's got the CC next to his name, which stands for care center. So
he's got to learn. Once you learn, you move on, you know, and he's, I think he's in the midst of that humbling moment, perhaps.
Awesome. I think that's going to be great. And I think more research went into my care center than I did for my Twitter about Dark Horse.
You got your priorities right, man.
Yeah. Oh,
it's fun, man. That's something you normally think about, you know? You see these names all week, and some you recognize, some you don't, and you're like, man, now I got to pay attention, see what's going on.
That's the beauty about NASCAR, I think, right? I mean, there's storylines all up and down the track. It isn't just about the winner, you know? There's personalities, there's attitudes, and you see that in other sports. But now they've got a 750 horsepower metal missile driving down the track with attitude. So, you know, it ain't like a baseball player holding a bat. It's a little bit more dangerous than that.
Slightly. just a little bit.
What do you guys thinking? You got anything else you want to talk about? I think there's a little bit. I've seen some things going on the Twitters on numbers being moved away from the center of the door.
Right. Yeah.
Which, you know, the atypical NASCAR fans are, you know, ready to jump off the cliff and threaten to leave NASCAR again, which, you know, wouldn't be a sad thing, but whatever.
It's the same people that threaten to leave and don't buy tickets to go to the race anyway. So, we had a good conversation about this in our pre-show, and I don't care. It is a car. It goes around the track, and yes, the numbers have a purpose. And they used to be for when there was a guy tallying how many laps you did up in the booth. And nowadays, yeah, your number is your identity. But I think we're missing the point that there's a huge number on the roof of these cars. And most of these tracks have banking, and the camera only ever really shows the roof. So do what you want with the side. Take the numbers off the side. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. And I know why NASCAR is doing this, and Adam, you spoke about it last night. The sponsors want they want their logo displayed more prevalently, right? They want to have it on the side. They want to actually, you know, instead of like Bubba had a McDonald's car this week, and the half the M was cut off by the rear wheel well, right? So let's give them the spots they need. They keep the sport up and running, right? Let's give them what they want, and, you know, have them pay the bills for us so we can keep racing.
What do you think, Brent? Because, you know, thinking about like other racing series outside of NASCAR, you know, what do they do? Or it, you know what I mean? Like IndyCar or other racing series, like an SCCA or something like that, you know?
When you step down to like SCCA or NASA with the amateur stuff, most of those guys don't have any sponsors, so they're paying their own bills. But if you look at IMSA, I mean, there's a 12 hours of Sebring is on Saturday. If you want to get all your motorsports fix in, you can watch the first part of the Sebring race before the Xfinity race. Then you can watch the truck race. Then you can pick up the Sebring race when it comes back on TV at 7 o'clock at night. So,
case of heavies.
I know. Yeah, it's awesome. But yeah, if you look at the IMSA cars, I mean, their numbers are very small. Part of it's the, you know, if you look into some of the more, I'll call them prototype style race cars, they don't have the tall door panels to put numbers on anyways. So that's part of it. But yeah, they've never had the big, you know, big tall numbers on cars at all. So that's just kind of a norm for them.
I mean, you guys are bringing up a good point. Like Matt, you're saying the location of the number on the side anyway is not a huge deal, just because of the car positioning and the camera angle and all that stuff, which, you know, now that you say that out loud, like, makes me think, like, okay, so why would a sponsor want that location where the number is now if the camera angle isn't great?
Good point.
You know, it is that alludes to the bigger question here of the economics of NASCAR, I think, is where this really goes for me anyway. And we've heard some, and we were just talking about how kind of the numbers and like the winnings and stuff like that have kind of gone dark and secret over the last couple of years. But Bubba Wallace, in a recent podcast interview he did, he led on to information that you're looking, you know, to be a competitive Cup Series car, the team is probably going to spend anywhere from $500,000 to $600,000 in a weekend to make that car competitive. There's 36, I think it's 36 races, right, in a season. You know, that puts you in the $20 to $30 million range, you know, and based on Bubba's words, to be a competitive car. That doesn't necessarily guarantee you anything. I mean, spending more money doesn't guarantee you a championship either, but it certainly doesn't hurt your odds. And from everything I can find, your 75% of that money is based on sponsorship. So the money's got to come from somewhere. And if companies are willing to do that, then that's great. And so should they have say in where they get to put their logo on the car? Yeah, certainly. I think they do. And if it really doesn't matter on the side of the car, then take it away completely, maybe, like you were suggesting. I don't know.
You know what? It comes from, and this is tradition, right? And that's where everything gets hung up on. It's tradition, right?
Yeah.
It gets to a point, guys. If you want to keep your sport, you gotta adapt. You gotta grow a little bit, right? So yeah. I think it's a no-brainer for NASCAR. Move it back. Who cares? But it doesn't matter. You know, as long as you can identify the car on television or in person, that's all that matters. So you can't have a bunch of like they did. Like, look, what was that? The truck race. Was it last weekend or the weekend before where Camping World sponsored like 6 trucks?
Yep.
They all had similar paint jobs.
They're doing it again. Yeah, I don't know if it's this weekend or if it's for Bristol, because obviously Bristol Dirt's going to get a lot of attention.
Oh, sure. It's already
from
started.
A national media standpoint compared to Atlanta this week. But
camper sales are up.
Sales are up. And in some interesting information that I'm reading about ratings for NASCAR's 3 series is the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series ratings are up year over year. And Cup is down year over year. And that's a whole nother conversation, I think, about why that could be. And, you know, but I think about, for me, the times of day and the nights that typically those series are on, as in Truck and Xfinity versus NASCAR. And those races in Truck and Xfinity are generally shorter. And they create more chaos sometimes. It's more exciting in a sense of that, aside from Kyle Busch getting hot. But
it's almost guaranteed at this point. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like, my favorite race of the year is the truck race at Daytona to start the year off. It is absolute chaos. And I love it. And these kids are trying to make a name for themselves, right? Trying to break into sport. And what bigger stage to do it at than the Daytona 500 or the Daytona 500 weekend. So
do you remember when, and I don't know if any of you guys have seen this race. I don't know what year this was, but this was a truck race at Daytona, you know, that weekend leading up to the 500, to the Cup 500. And I don't know who it was, came across the tri-oval at Daytona, and the truck just went end over end. The engine came off of the chassis and went rolling down the infield grass there at the front stretch, and just the truck was in pieces. Do you guys remember that at all?
Oh my god, it rings a bell, but I can't place the year.
There was I can't place the year either, but there was quite a bit of safety changes after that.
I can imagine.
Because the engine became removed from the vehicle at 180 miles an hour.
There's some parts you never want to see, because, you know, where's all your weight in the front of that chassis, right?
I bet if you YouTube that, you could find it. I can't remember the year, but I remember watching it on TV.
Insanity. Absolute insanity. But, right. Yeah, so the racing's up, the excitement's up, and there's a lot of new sponsors coming into the Xfinity and truck teams. So it's exciting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the whole conversation about sponsorship money, and obviously that plays a huge deal in the equation. you know, but a little bit what NASCAR has done over the years is the charter system, right? So the charter system from a cup perspective, I think that was, what, 3 or 4 years ago? And it's really was a process or a system to not necessarily level the playing field, but to reward the teams and cars that were consistently being competitive, as in qualifying every weekend. And if you're just a regular sports fan, think of a charter like a sports franchise. That's really, I think, the easiest way to explain it. And so essentially right now there's 36 charters that are out there. I think it's 36.
Yep,
so based on the algorithm and the math they did of who was competitive in qualifying every weekend, they issued those however many years ago now. So you can obtain a charter these days on the open market. You can buy it from another team. You could lease it or rent it from another team. But for example, like somebody like Hendrick, right? So Hendrick, every car requires a charter. Well, I shouldn't say that. Every car doesn't necessarily require a charter, but if you have a charter, you're guaranteed a spot in every race. So essentially, there's going to be 36 cars in every single race every year if you have a charter, assuming you have the sponsorship money to actually run it. But that leaves 4 open spaces, because I think we're 40 cars. Like, as in this weekend in Atlanta, there's 40 cars, I think, in the field or in the entry list. So there's 4 teams in that sense at this point that don't have a charter that are running part-time this weekend. So what that, I think, has done is kind of made NASCAR into a regular sport in the sense of the layout and how it's done. And I think that helps with understanding how much it's going to cost to run a team, interesting new people to come into the sport, like Michael Jordan, for example, because now there's this structure, aside from the cars having to be following by a rule book, right? But now there's this, you know, business side attached to it. So
yeah, and they get a return if they do leave the sport, right? They have a return on their investment.
Correct. They can sell that charter or rent it or lease it, right?
Correct. Yeah, and you don't make money racing. No one makes money racing, but you know, you recover some of it, right? You put something back in the bank when it's all over. So,
yeah. So if 75% of the money is from sponsorship, right? So the other 25% has got to come from somewhere. So, you know, the Rick Hendricks, the Joe Gibbs, the Roger Penske's of the world, obviously their business ventures allow them to foot the bill for the difference. And is, you know, if you had to look at the balance sheet, is probably what makes them better, because they have the resources to spend when they need to.
Yep. And looking at the entry, just the cup teams this year, right? So of all the charters you mentioned, there's 2 cars that are already signed up to run a full-time schedule that do not have a charter. And that's the 37 of JTG Doherty Racing. And the 66, the Motorsports Business Management car. So it's they're sponsored, but like you said, so, they don't have a charter. So they're racing to qualify to get in, or staying up in points so they continue to stay up when we're not qualifying.
So the 37 car, that's Ryan Preece, right?
Correct. Yep.
So Ryan Preece right now is sitting in 14th position with 123 points, which puts him in the chase.
Yep.
If it would here we it. Are, you know, going into race 6, and a non-charter driver is, you know, if the season ended today, he's in the chase, and he's got, you know, he's got an opportunity just like everybody else to win at that point.
That's it.
That's wild.
It's just
the 66 is, God, who the hell is 66?
66 is Timmy Hill.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, yeah, can't win them all, I guess. So.
If you know, if you're not a 50 something and you're higher than that, oof.
the infamous 78 car, Furniture Rover. They were that car many years before it clicked. So,
they got a good one.
Bud, we've been at this, man. I think we got it covered. I think we gave our audience a good preview of Atlanta coming forward. And, you know, if they didn't pick up on tires, where tires are going to make this race. Might want to go back and re-listen.
Yep, that's for sure. Brent, what do you got?
I got an empty snack container and an empty beverage container. So,
Brent's out of snacks. We got to call it. We got to call it. Brent's out of snacks.
We got like 3 seconds before we lose Brent completely. So,
all right. Well,
I'm about to pass out. My blood sugar's getting low.
Man. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening today. We hope that you enjoy the Cup race on Sunday. And Matt, what do you say? What's the word?
Gentlemen, keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down. And I'm not going to jinx us again. So we're going to end on that.
All right. We'll see you, boys. Have a good night.
Be good. See you guys.